And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with me today, Joseph Russell. Joe is the Executive Director and American Heart Association Instructor for the CPAT Network, and that stands for CPR, AED, Public Awareness, and Training Network. Welcome, Joe. Welcome.
Thank you, Laura, for having me. Very excited to being here with you today.
Full disclosure here, of course, we just completed a training course here at Beasley Media Group. All of the stations, we got together, and we took your training class. We learned some basic information that everybody ought to know. At least that's my opinion. And is that the right thing to say?
Absolutely. First, I want to say I was very thankful for the call that you made inquiring about wanting to learn CPR, wanting your staff to learn. You know, the question is, if a person goes in a cardiac arrest, okay, that simply means person's heart has stopped. Does this person, do they deserve a best chance, a best opportunity to surviving? And I think absolutely, we all would say, yes, this person deserves their best chance, their best opportunity. And so in order to giving this person a best chance, the best opportunity, we need persons trained. We need persons to take that first step to acknowledge, yes, I want to learn. And I will want to be confident enough that I can actually do this. And so I'm very thankful. My background, I worked as a paramedic for the Philadelphia Fire Department for 10 years. I created an organization, a nonprofit called CPR AED Public Awareness and Training Network, August of 2005. Very thankful for the support and help of fellow colleagues, paramedics and firefighters that worked alongside with me with a mission, the mission to saving lives. Far too often, I would arrive on a scene and no CPR was being given. And in my mind is, just what if someone had started the simple act of chest compression? Someone started the CPR, would they have given this person their best chance, their best opportunity to survive?
The reasons why not, you bring them up. You say, hey, you're scared to try. But what happens if you just try?
You know what? Trying is doing something. So let's just go over. Okay, a person is going about their day. They don't know that they're going to have a medical emergency. So this person, for whatever the reason, their heart stops. So let's break it down a little bit, what's happening. The heart stops pumping blood. Well, why exactly do we need blood to pump? We need the blood to pump. We need blood to circulate because oxygen is carried in that blood. And so the cells of your body, the cells in your brain, cells throughout the entire body, it needs a constant flow of oxygenated blood to keeping these cells alive. So a person's heart stops, they collapse to the ground. What's needed is someone to first recognize that this person needs help. And then for someone to call 911, somebody to call for an AED. Start the chest compressions. Once they establish the person doesn't have signs of life, no coughing, no breathing, no pulse. Just the chest compressions can save a person's life. So you say, well, you know, how easy is it? Can a person really do it wrong? Well, let's think about this. Would it make sense to place the heel of your hand over the stomach? Or because we need to squeeze blood out of the heart, just place the heel of your hand in the center of the chest because we need to make the blood flow. We need to make it circulate. We need to pump, push, squeeze, squish the blood out of the heart. And we're going to say, you know, there are a set number of times that you would do this. We can talk about that. But if you can just circulate that blood for the person, you're doing the best that you can to saving this person's life. It really is that simple.
Just the act of trying, obviously, is more than doing nothing at all.
First, if you can just at least, let's go with the minimal. If you could just at least recognize that this person is experiencing a medical emergency, they need 911. That's the minimum requirement is let me call for help. So even if you stood there and you completely froze, you're paralyzed and you're not doing anything, if you could at least call for help, that's at least a step forward in a good positive direction because we're getting more definitive care to the person. Now, if you can have the wherewithal in your being to muster up, what should I do next? And you say, well, let me just check to see if this person is breathing. Let me check to see if they have a pulse. Do they have any other signs of life? And then you kind of like can remember, okay, heart's not beating. I don't see any obvious sign of life. Let me, you know, pull them out of the sofa, take them off of this chair, pull them out of this bed, place them on a flat hard surface, and let me start these chest compressions. That's what we're asking. So that's what we need you to remember.
So just the act of calling 911. When you see someone down, call 911, and then you can assess the situation.
Right.
If we have the composure and we think we can do it, and no one else is stepping up, we calmly say, call 911, or we do it ourselves first, and then we ask someone to go and look for an AED.
Right. And so let's just talk. So we say call 911. We say get the AED. Let's break that down. AED standing for automated external defibrillator. So a defibrillator, this is a machine that would deliver a shock to a person that is in cardiac arrest. And if you yell to a person, you say, hey, I need the AED. I need a defibrillator. If that person is staring at you, they might not know what you are talking about. All right. So this is the professional terminology lingo that we're using to call it an AED, calling it a defibrillator. So let's break it down for them. Let's simply call it a heart shocker. Because most persons would have seen a heart shocker, a defibrillator, being used in a movie-type setting. Okay, so we've all seen those very dramatic movies on film where our actor or actress is down, the heart's not beating, someone has to grab a defibrillator, and we're all anxiously waiting to see if the shock is going to bring them back to life. So a lot of people do know and have seen defibrillators. So we tell that person, here's the sequence. We said to call 911. We said to get the defibrillator. Now, we're not just waiting for that defibrillator to come back. We're going to do something for this person. You have to continue your assessment. So what are we assessing for? When I say assessing something, what are you checking for? We now need to check to see if the person has a pulse. We check the neck. We check the carotid artery. Now, that is something definitely medical workers, we are quite familiar with checking for carotid artery, checking a pulse. For laypersons, non-medical persons, we put the emphasis on checking for the basic signs of life. So I'll say it again, basic signs of life. Here's a question. Is the person coughing? Are they breathing? Are they moving? Basic signs of life. No basic sign of life. They're not coughing, not breathing, not moving. Don't have a pulse. Okay, that right there lets you know this person's in cardiac arrest. And when we say cardiac arrest, we're simply saying that the heart has stopped. We're also saying that the person does not have a pulse. So, okay, that's your problem or this person's problem. Their heart's not beating. They don't have a pulse. What should we now do about it becomes the question. And there is something that you can do about it. And so that's the exciting part about it is that you can, yes, make the difference. So once again, this person in a sofa bed or a chair, get them onto a flat heart surface. You're going to prepare to give chest compressions. And so how this is done is you'll take your, you have them flat heart surface. You'll take your dominant hand. Okay. You're going to put that in the center of the chest. You're going to interlock your other hand over top of that hand. And you're going to make sure that the heel of your hand is in the center of the chest. Mistakes that I've seen when arriving on scene is a person pushing over the person's stomach. They have their hand in the wrong place. So it should never be over the stomach. It should not be over the end tip of their sternum or breastbone. It's a real fancy terminology, that prominent bone there. It's called the xiphoid process. It's, you can find that if you trace out where your ribs would meet. Okay, so you have ribs. Okay, start at the bottom. You go from the right. You go to the left. The ribs are going to meet in a particular place. Right there is your xiphoid process. Very fragile end piece of the breastbone. We never would want you to place the heel of your hand there. So we always would want the heel of your hand to be two fingers above the xiphoid process. You're interlocking your fingers. You have your elbows locked. You're on your knees. You're up and you're pushing. So you're not slouched over. So when I say up, you're not slouched over. Okay. You're up on your knees. Everything is locked and you kind of like push from your shoulders. Keep everything locked and you're going to push straight down. What's interesting, I often ask students, okay, what are we actually doing to the blood in the heart? Like, what are we doing when we give a chest compression? Most people say, well, we pump the chest. That's correct. We make the blood flow. That's also correct. We circulate the blood. But then I ask, are we actually squeezing blood out of the heart? And that's when students, they kind of like look around and it's like, wow, that sounds quite dramatic. But the answer to that is, yes, you are. When we give a chest compression, That is the purpose. That is the objective. That's exactly what we're doing. We're going to push hard enough to squeezing the blood out of the heart. This is what we call a chest compression. And so for an adult, 2 to 2.5 inches, that's about how far we need to compress down. No, you won't have a ruler at the time to measure. So you got to get the sense that you're pushing hard enough. Yes, there is a possibility that you can break a rib. We want to encourage you to just make sure you're in the proper place, because if you're too far over on the right or the left, you would be directly over the ribs, and that is how you can break the rib. So just make sure you have the correct hand placement. Make sure you're on that breastbone, and you will go ahead and proceed to giving chest compressions. Now, Laura, I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
Are we going to change hats now? Got a question for you. Here's the question. There is a song that as we were giving chest compressions, okay, a slight rendition of that song, Laura, please.
Staying alive. Staying alive. And you made it funny because you did give us the opportunity to choose Another One Bites the Dust.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, I just gave away one of your funniest lines.
Exactly. No, absolutely. So in this life, we have choices. Okay. So to choose a more appropriate song for this situation, we would admonish you, encourage you to go with Staying Alive.
Well, it was the right beat, 30 quick beats and or pushes, compressions.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So it's 30 compressions that we're giving. Once again, you're pressing straight down. You go right to 30. You're counting out. It's 1, 2, 3, 4. You hear that? 5, ha, 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 staying alive. And you keep going with those compressions. 20, 21, 22, 3, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30. All right, so you just gave that 30 compressions. This is the part where people are like, am I obligated? Am I forced to give the breaths? So remember, we give the 30 compressions. What about the breaths? All right, American Heart Association, we are putting more of an emphasis on hands-only CPR. Okay, if you have the proper equipment, you have a barrier protection, you have a face mask, you have a face shield, by all means use it. But if you do not have the proper equipment to protecting yourself, you say protecting yourself from what? Oh, we have communicable diseases. Okay, we are still in the middle of a pandemic, a quite global. So, you know, this is still out there. It's still going on. So here's the point that we're saying is just the chest compressions alone can save a person's life. All right. We do not want you to feel that you are shortchanging the person. You're not giving them their all by not giving mouth-to-mouth breaths. Now, if this is a loved one and you would want to go ahead and give the mouth-to-mouth breaths, okay, fine. Give the breaths. How would you do that? So let's say this is a loved one. Pinch the nose, tilt the head back. You simply put your mouth over their mouth. You make a tight seal and you give a breath. Now, you're going to know that that air is going in. So like, well, let me ask you this. Like, how would you know that that air is going in? Well, you're going to look to the chest. You're going to look to the chest to see if the chest is rising. And so it would be one breath per second watching for the rise and fall of the chest. And so that's how we put the air, the oxygen that we have in us. And that's pretty neat that we as human beings could give our air, give our oxygen to another to saving their lives. I just think that's just so phenomenal that our bodies are created in such a way that we could actually possibly save each other.
When you pull up, you're sucking some oxygen in anyway.
Right. Well, more specifically, when we give the chest compression, yes, we squeeze the blood out of the heart, but it's when we take our weight off of our hands, okay, the heart will re-expand. Blood flow flows back into the heart, and then we push it back out again. When we're breathing air into the person's lungs, that's how we get oxygen into the person's bloodstream. And so you give the breath, you exhale into the person, okay? Their chest will re-expand, okay? And then you wait for the re-expansion of their, when you get that inhalation that you're putting into that person, you have to wait for their chest to re-expand. So we don't want you to breathe so quickly into the person's chest. That's why we say you wait 1 second, okay, between breathing into a person.
32 breaths, 32 breaths. See, I learned
right.
5 reps, and then we check to see if they have a pulse. And if they do, recovery position. put them on their side facing you. If not, flip them back over and start all over again. And for a child, we just use one hand. And for a baby, we just use two fingers.
That is correct. It is 30. If you have a helper with you, there's a little breakdown with children and infants that you can just give 15. And these points, we want people to remember the principles, the principle of what we teach. If you forget a number, you lost track of your count. So we say 30 compressions, 2 breaths. We do that for a full 2 minutes. We stop. We reassess to see if we have a pulse. And then if you don't, of course, you go right back into it. But let's say, you know, if we look at a realistic situation, it's a lot of chaos, a lot of pandemonium, very difficult. You're giving chest compressions. People are yelling, hollering. You know, a lot of things go through people's minds. Like, I can't believe I'm here in this moment. I can't believe that this is happening. It's a lot of things that really, even in a training situation, we can't quite mimic that would happen in real life. So when we're teaching, we like to explain to people, okay, you might actually lose track of how many cycles. So we do the CPR, 5 cycles, 2 minutes, then reassess. You may lose track of that. You may, you know, not know because you're not tracking time for how many minutes you've been giving these chest compressions. So what do you do at that point? The guideline is, and what I'm specifically teaching as an American Heart Association instructor is the 30 compressions. Let's just say you don't know the person, so it's hands-only CPR. You'll do 5 rounds of 30 compressions, 2 full minutes of 30 compressions, and then you stop to reassess for a pulse. But you've lost track of that time. What do you do? Well, let's simply check. What are we checking for? The basic signs of life. You're checking to see if the person is coughing, are they breathing, are they moving? Now, although you've lost track of time, the question is a person's heart beating now? If the answer is no, then you need to go back to chest compressions. It's really that simple. If the answer is yes, the heart's beating, they're breathing, they're showing you obvious signs of life, then we can simply turn that person to the side. And we're doing that because a person can breathe a lot easier on their side. If they would begin to vomit, they're on their side. The only person that we would not move is if we had a person with a spinal injury. And you had to take a look. And to consider if that could be the case.
Let's get into the CPAT network then. Who are the instructors? And is this the method that you do it? You're very calm. Yeah, well, obviously, I know this is the method that you do it. You're very calm. Why should an office, again, call and do this?
Within 4 to 6 minutes of a person not breathing, the heart not beating, cells will begin to die. So when we say time is of the essence, we really, really mean that. If we're going to give this person their best chance, their best opportunity to survive, then we need that person that is closest to the person whose heart has stopped to start the CPR, specifically start the chest compressions. Every minute count. Listen to this guideline. For every 1 minute that a person does not get CPR, they're going to actually lose a 10% chance of living. So every 1 minute, a 10% chance of living is lost. So this is why we need that office staff to be trained. Who can go into cardiac arrest? Any one of us. You can have a heart defect that you are completely unaware of. You can have a blood vessel in your brain. And I don't mean to make anybody more anxiously paranoid, but just know our bodies work in very efficient ways, but you can actually have a failure of something. A person that's 20 years old is young adult, but this is a body whose heart has been beating nonstop for 20 years straight. Think about how remarkable that is. This heart is working without fail, with no issues, no problem. What if this 20-year-old's heart valve, for whatever the reason, has a slight genetic defect and their valve is not working correctly and that causes the heart to stop? What if it's a slightly older person who there's a coronary artery blockage in their artery, blood flow can't get through, heart stops working, they're having this classic heart attack, heart's not working correctly to the point that it stops. Now the heart attack has progressed into cardiac arrest. And so, you know, we can't look at any one person and say, well, that person is the book of health. That person has the perfect body. Nothing can happen to them. That's not exactly how it works. What we say is best for us all, to being prepared. We need to do right by our own bodies by staying physically fit. Yes, we need to eat the right things. Yes, we need to consider stress. They're finding studies have shown that stress could be as worse as smoking. Like all of these things in our lives are important to keeping our bodies in tip-top shape. But in the event that an emergency, medical emergency occurs, why don't we? Why shouldn't we have people prepared to giving another a best chance to survive?
Tell us a little bit, who is the and what is the CPAT Network?
Right, so CPAT Network, once again, created by a group of paramedics from Philadelphia Fire Department and firefighters. It's all about, because of our unique experience of responding to tens of thousands of emergency calls with becoming American Heart Association instructors, the whole idea is to train, teach, educate the public. Simple as that. Simple ways on what they need to do to save lives. We have the experience. We know what this is, what a person will feel in a real life situation. So it's not just us, you know, we became instructors just from watching videos. We've never actually done this before. No, we're going to tell you exactly what it's like to give a chest compression. So it's using our own life experiences and working in this particular space to then teach and educate the public. Simple as that.
I'd like to say we were your most fun group, but you've trained quite a few people over the years, haven't you?
We have very thankful, very blessed. Trained the Philadelphia School District, teacher's aides and teachers and students. So I have a contract with the Philadelphia School District there. The Philadelphia Recreation Department, we did a massive program of training every recreation worker. We helped to coordinate placement of defibrillators in every recreation center. So very thankful for all the 400 city workers that we provide biannual trainings to. The Philadelphia Phillies front office, we provided their training. So just very thankful for that opportunity. Chubb Insurance, multiple Fortune 500 companies we provided trainings to. And then we have ongoing trainings that we would do for persons working in the health field. So all your major health staffing companies throughout Philadelphia, through our office on City Avenue, we have persons that will come in for a training. And this training is needed every 2 years. If you're in the medical field, you need to recertify, and we provide that.
You go out to locations, but then people can come to your place as well?
Absolutely. So persons, we have trainings throughout the week. You can just come in our offices and you can receive a training. If you have a minimal 4 persons, we will come to you and provide a training. So as long as you have the space to accommodate, and of course, we use all precautions in reference to COVID, where we are still with this pandemic.
Mm-hmm. But then once we learn, there is an app out there, and we're located in Montgomery County, and Montgomery County has adopted this. Do you want to tell us a little bit about
Absolutely.
That?
Absolutely. So we had a great opportunity to working with Montgomery County Board of Commissioners, specifically Josh Shapiro, who's currently the Attorney General. I'm very thankful for being able to work with his staff to introducing PulsePoint. PulsePoint is a cell phone app. It's a free app. What it will do is, if a person goes into cardiac arrest, somebody calls 911, the 911 dispatcher will then activate the PulsePoint alert system. So if you're within a 3-block radius of this person that's in cardiac arrest, you'll get that alert. The alert will show you exactly where the person is. You can simply go to that person. The alert will also show you where your closest defibrillator is. So here's a situation where, if we're going to give persons a best chance to survive, then we need to be able to get to them faster, quicker, sooner. And we're using the latest technology to do that. We all have cell phones on us. So this cell phone is an alerting system that can let you know that a person nearby is in cardiac arrest. And we're so thankful that Montgomery County recognized the need to having this. Thousands of counties all throughout the United States have this capability. So I would encourage you to check the county that you live in to see if they have the PulsePoint app.
You could be sitting in a restaurant in another county, in another state, and your app might go off, and it could be in the store right next door. They're looking for someone to do CPR.
Absolutely. We're very excited with Montgomery County acquiring this. Within the first 6 weeks of them launching the PulsePoint app, we had the first life saved, 52-year-old. And so that's what this is all about. So we really need to get the word out out that this exists is Pulse Point, PulsePoint. Okay, so Pulse Point, just Google it. If you go to the App Store, just type it in, download it. And then there's another part of the app where it will show you where your closest defibrillator is. So if you're on scene and you don't see a defibrillator, you can activate that Pulse Point app and you can see geographically where you are and go get the closest defibrillator to you, because that defibrillator is going to double the person's chance of surviving sudden cardiac arrest.
I didn't ask you about the defibrillator because when you showed it to us, it was easy. It tells you what to do. So, you know, it's really the CPR that wanted to emphasize today. So really quickly, we're running out of time. Should we be afraid of offering assistance to somebody on the street? What can we be held liable for anything that happens?
There are Good Samaritan laws that will provide immunity so that you cannot be found at fault. You in good faith trying to help a person, that's called the Good Samaritan law. All states have Good Samaritan law. They're AED Good Samaritan laws. These laws specifically apply if a person is using a defibrillator or a person giving CPR. So we don't want that fear of people feeling that, you know, legally I can be held liable, because then nobody's helping anyone. So just know that the law is there. That law is there to protect you.
I'm a little person. You know, if somebody big fell down, would I be able to do it? A
couple of things. Well, the hope is your adrenaline will kick in, that extra little energy that will be needed. And then you can just, you know, push a little bit harder. So you'll have that helping you. But by also teaching and making sure people know where to place the heel of their hands. Hey, you got this muscular guy who just left out of LA Fitness. Hey, you, I need your help. I don't know CPR. Listen, I'm going to show you exactly what you need to do. You'll take that person's hands. You'll put his hands in the center of that person's chest and you will start counting for him, and you'll tell that gentleman to push. So, you know, knowing what to do, that's where the key is, because you can make the difference.
I'm by myself. Dial 911 before I start.
Okay, so remember, we always make sure the scene is safe enough. Then you check for a response to see if the person can simply talk back to you, to see if they can, you know, they might be okay. As I said, they might be taking a nap. So check for a response. No response from that person at that point triggers us to saying call 911. We say get the AED. Then we go to checking for pulse, no pulse, signs of life. Get them to the floor, start the chest compressions, heel of the hands, center of the chest, start those chest compressions, do 30 compressions, 2 full minutes of that, then you reassess, you recheck to see what you have.
But we have already dialed 911.
And 911 is after we have established that this person is not talking back to us. There's no response from this person. That's when we're calling 911. When you're by yourself, and that's once again based on the fact that this person is not responding, or they're not responding appropriately. A person can have a pulse, they can be breathing, but because they're not responding appropriately, they're having some other medical emergency. So we definitely would want 911 call.
Okay. How do we get in touch with you?
Okay, sure. So once again, my name is Joseph Russell, CPAT Network. We are actually too located in Bala Kenwood, 11 Bala Avenue, Bala Kenwood, PA.
And online, cpatnetwork.com. That's cpatnetwork.com. Testimonial, you give a great class. But if you're not in this area, if you're in another state, wherever you may be hearing this, just Google search and look for CPR training. Reach out to the American Heart Association, the American Red Cross. Get your staff trained is what I'm really hoping that we get as the takeaway today.
Absolutely. Folks, it's all about giving persons the best chance, best opportunity. I'm not going to take credit for this. I don't know where I heard this, but it was once said, how do you gauge how civil a society is? And the answer that was given is how well that society takes care of each other. So think about that. What makes us civil is how well we take care of each other. If I go to the far extreme, you have cannibalism, right? So the far extreme, you're devouring each other. If I take it to the other extreme, you're saving each other. You're loving each other. You're caring for each other. That is how we gauge how civil we can ever be, because we're caring for each other.
And we're offering the best chance for someone to survive. Reach out to the organization near you. Here, of course, CPAT Network. That's CPAT Network. And you can find them online at CPATnetwork.com. And social media. You're there, too, as CPAT Network for Twitter and for Facebook. My guest today, Joseph Russell. Joe is the executive director at CPAT Network. Thanks for being on today.
Laura, thanks for having me. It was a pleasure providing the training to the Beasley Group. So it was just totally awesome. So thank you for taking advantage of us.
It was fun. I have to say that. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.